Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 7th of February. A Crimes Against Children's Center at the University of New Hampshire has released a report on children and teens who are being exposed to or seeking out and finding it pretty easy to get online pornography. Most of this by accidentally viewing sexually explicit websites while surfing the internet. 42% of internet users ages 10 to 17 have seen online pornography. In a recent 12-month span, 66% said they didn't want to view the images and had not sought them out. The conclusions of the study in February's Pediatrics magazine, which is due out on Monday. Parts of the study released last November found that 1 in 7 teenagers had received unwanted sexual solicitations or approaches in the past year. And we'll be talking about the number of 10 and 11-year-olds who had unwanted exposure, the number of girls and boys who have gone online to view pornography quite willingly. And what all of this means? Does this give our children a warped view of sexuality? Is it a way for sexual predators to get at a population that is very sexually curious? We also had then the, I don't know if you saw the cover of Newsweek this week, the Girls Gone Wild effect with Paris, Brittany, and Lindsay and Nicole. They seem to be everywhere, and they may not be wearing underwear. So we got a lot of junk in our culture here, and what does it do to our kids to be exposed to all of this junk? Maybe I'm just an old fogey now, but it seems to me as though this stuff wasn't around when I was a kid. Playboy was a different thing. This stuff wasn't around. So we're going to take on the whole issue, and I imagine we're going to get a lot of calls. I think this is an issue, you know, the pornography on the internet, some of the stuff you don't want, it affects all of us, certainly, but for this very young adolescent group, it may have ramifications that we need to know about. All right, so we're going to find out about all of this hour and welcome your phone calls. Our guest is Dr. Sharon Hurst. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Chicago Hospitals. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you are joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation today. Dr. Sharon Hirsch, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I think this stuff is all over the place, and it is a very underreported story that has ramifications for our young people. And for the life of me, I don't understand why it's so easy to get at all of this stuff. There is a lot of junk out there.
Well, there is a lot of junk on the internet that comes to you unsolicited. And I think that we've all experienced that. It's very intrusive. It takes up space. It takes up time. And some of it is, frankly, disgusting.
Right. Yeah, it sure is. But if you're a 12-year-old or if you're 11-year-old, you might find it rather interesting, right?
Well, you might find it interesting or curious, but you also might find it kind of scary. Remember, these are kids that really have never, well, some of them have, but for the most part, they have not seen people engaged in sex acts before and really haven't seen a lot of naked bodies.
You have said that they could see things they're not emotionally prepared to see yet, which can cause trauma to them. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you have come across any of these very graphic images on the internet, it's not just what we used to see or some people saw in Playboy, where it's just an artistic woman's body out there. You see things that may be quite graphic. Remember, it's the internet. It's not a still photograph. You might see people actually engaged in sex acts. And if you've got younger children, they may not be really understanding what sex is. They may not understand that a man holding a woman down might be anything other than an aggressive act.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, is what, you know, they could see it. Also, there some of the sites, especially if they have child pornography, are very, you know, apropos to these children who may relate more to them. And those children may be held down in bondage position, being horribly brutalized, not just sexually used. So those are things that may be very traumatic for even for adults, but especially for children who may not understand it.
And they find this unintentionally for those who are just, it's popping up while they're surfing the internet to do their science homework. This is something, this must be a shock for many of these young people. What the heck is this? I thought I was studying DNA.
Exactly. It's intrusive.
Yeah. So we have 42%. This is a very large number, isn't it, Dr. Hirsch, of young people ages 10 to 17 who have seen online pornography in the last 12 months. That's a lot of them.
It is. It's increased from the last time the survey was done. And I think what we need to realize is that, you know, at least when I was growing up, exposure to unwanted pornography just really didn't occur. You know, there might be a magazine on the news rack, but generally that was covered in the crucial areas. So this is something new for this generation where they actually kind of stumble across this unwanted exposure.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if a lot of research has been done, and if we can say this with any definity here, but you talk about unwanted exposure to online pornography or even wanted exposure among these young people could lead young people to become sexually active too soon, could put them at risk for being victimized by sexual predators if they visit sites that prey on children.
Well, I think one of the things that this study brings out is, and is a very good point, is that a lot of times the kids who come across unwanted or wanted pornography on the Internet are people that have been victimized offline. So they're vulnerable youth already. And we know that people who have been abused or who have been exposed to a lot of very vivid or very graphic images, whether it's sex or whether it's gun violence or other violence, are much more likely to perpetrate or to reenact what they've seen because they get used to it. They really aren't used to seeing the consequences because we see the acts on television or the acts on the Internet. We don't see the long-term consequences of that, whether it's injury or sexually transmitted diseases. Mm-hmm. Or unwanted pregnancy. So there's just a lot of very serious consequences that I think we are not aware of yet for our youth.
Mm-hmm. Is it fairly easy? I mean, I think that we have sort of this technology gap right now, and there are a lot of us who use the Internet for our jobs and absolutely have no idea whatsoever how to get to any of these sites. It seems as though young people are able to navigate the Internet, and for some reason, those who are seeking out this kind of material know how to find it.
Well, I think that our youth are very computer savvy, and mm-hmm. I will always ask a younger youth teenager if I get stuck on my computer over somebody
right, my age. Right. Yeah, and they certainly know how to find it. How do they know how, though? Is it they're talking among themselves at school? Here's a site you ought to go to find this? Or is it just easy to navigate the system to find all of this junk?
Well, I don't have a research study that gives us the answer to that, but generally these kids do file sharing, they do a lot of talking, and certainly they know how to find things on the Internet. And they're very computer savvy. If they plug in a word, they know that it's going to come up. So if they plug in an anatomical part of the body, you know, it's going to be pretty easy to come up with some sites. Because, you know, a lot of computers, and this is one thing that parents can do, is to really install good filtering software, not just the and blocking software, not just kind of the standards and making sure those are updated. But if you don't have those filters on your computer, anything can come through. And a lot of the file sharing programs don't have those filtering systems built in. And so they really get a lot of things. And then it just, you know, they pick up, oh, yeah, if I plug in this because I see it, you know, from this file that I shared, then I'll get more of this. So if they want exposure, it's very easy.
Right.
And then, of course, if you don't go in and delete your cookies from your computer, then people say, oh, they saw this before, let's send them more. And they kind of trace you like little breadcrumbs or cookie crumbs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you have to go through a whole lot in order to block this, don't you? That's not good. It just shouldn't be there in the first place, if you ask me.
Well, that would be nice, ideally. But actually, the study shows in documents to a certain degree that the improved filtering and blocking software has had an impact on decreasing the amount of at least unwanted pornography that people come across. But it certainly doesn't delete all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you start talking about kids who see this and say, gee, this is kind of interesting, and then they want more, you've got kids that are really very computer savvy. They can mask things, even if you have monitoring software, which requires a lot of upkeep because you have to look at the reports, you have to really be diligent about it. But kids can go in and delete cookies. I mean, they know how to do that. And they also, I think, you know, we have to remember that even though this is a modern era problem, that some of the solutions may be old-fashioned. So you need to know who your kids are hanging out with and what computers they are using. So if one of their friends' parents don't have filtering or blocking software, you bet if they want pornography, they're going over to that person's house.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to really be sure what they're doing. And then just keeping your kids around, keeping the computer in a place where you can really see what they're doing, and then talking with them about it. Because I think one of the things that we need to be very aware of is that kids, you know, whether innocently or not, will stumble across things. And we need to be ready as parents to step up to the plate and really say, gee, what did you see? What did you think? What is it? You know, kind of meet them where they're at on their level so that we can really help them understand what they saw. So it's not traumatic if they come across it. And so they understand that it's really not healthy and something they're not ready for. And, you know, hopefully at some point in time that they'll be ready for sex and they'll be able to go on to that, you know, according to your cultural beliefs when you're married or in whatever point in time that is. But I think that we really have to talk with them about it. And kids who are 10 years old in fourth grade are going to be starting to get sex education in school, depending on your school district, maybe fifth grade. And this offers another opportunity for us to expand upon sex education and the effects of unwanted sex or unwanted victimization.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the things we have to remember, too, is if this is traumatic for kids, they also know that it's not a good thing. And maybe they weren't supposed to see it. And so if you're a very punitive type parent, they may not feel comfortable coming to you because they may be afraid that they're going to get punished or in trouble. And so I always encourage the people I work with just to keep an open line of communication. It may be as simple as taking a walk with your child every evening or your adolescent or, you know, just doing a simple chore with them. I know with my 9-year-old, if I go in and help him clean his room, which he loves because he doesn't like to do it, he wants help. But those are some of the times that I get the best conversations. We may not get a lot of his room cleaned, but, you know, I'll find out what's really going on.
So if you find that your child is intentionally going to these sites, if you've got some kind of filter and you find it, or you find your child, you know, looking at stuff that you find pretty offensive with a pretty warped view of sexuality, what do you do?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to just kind of say, talk to them and say, you know, I found this. What's going on? I mean, it's going back to the old days again. It's like, you know, I found the stack of Playboys in your room.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? If it is more offensive or it's really things that are more than just pictures, it's actual acts or it's, you know, bondage or other things, I think, you know, you need to ratchet up your concern a little bit, but you need to be able to talk calmly and find out. And if the child is then just saying, well, I was just curious, it, you know, it will never happen again, and you can monitor that, you can take steps, but if their behavior has changed, if they are really reacting differently, you know, you want to look for all those signs that something's really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see, are they depressed? Are they withdrawing? Are they still playing with the same friends? Have they changed their group of friends? Are they more clingy, maybe? Or they, you know, is there something different going on? You want to watch for all those signs that maybe something else has happened. Because I would be concerned if someone is purposely going to very violent sites, that maybe something has happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, are they reenacting this in their play?
Mm-hmm.
Are they trying to do things to other people? Are they becoming more aggressive? Are they sexually acting out? Now, you got to remember that some degree of sexual exploration is normal for all children, even very young children. But if it's excessive and it interferes with whether it's the aggressive behavior or the sexual behavior, whether it's they're not able to contain that, then clearly that's a sign that there's something else going on. And I would urge the parent to seek some professional guidance at that point in time. They can start with their pediatrician, you know, going into a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and I deal with children that have been physically and sexually abused, and I've seen children that have been in child porn rings. And believe me, their behavior is something that you're not going to miss. But early on, you know, before they get to me, parents may, you know something's not quite right, but may not be able to figure it out. So that's when that, you know, opening those lines of communication and really finding out, being non-judgmental and just encouraging children to talk is just very important.
Right. The other thing that's of concern to me, and tell me what's going on with this, is that if you're seeing a lot of this, you don't understand then what a healthy sexual relationship is, that these images, and it's interesting that it's everywhere in our society. I was mentioning Newsweek with Paris and Brittany and Lindsay, who young girls are emulating them. They're described as oversexed, underdressed celebrities. who can't seem to step out of a car without displaying their well-waxed private parts to photographers. That there's sort of this fascination with these kinds of girls, that there's this junk on the internet. Maybe I'm going too far here, but it seems as though they're getting, you know, sexuality is a very wonderful thing in life, and they're getting a pretty warped view of this that could be damaging for them during these adolescent years. Am I off base here?
No, I think that certainly we learn as children and teenagers to model what we see and what's admired and made popular in the media. I mean, there's a lot of information this week about models and whether mm-hmm. they should be required to be a certain weight, and that's something we struggle with here also, is anorexia. And so these things are portrayed in the media and popular culture. That's what these girls may aspire to, and they don't see healthy models of sexuality, either because we don't talk about it or because it's not exciting enough to make the news. But, you know, I think turn off the TV. You know, don't let your kids see these articles. Turn off the internet. Mm-hmm. Really be aware of what your children are seeing, and then give them some healthy alternatives, because there are a lot of wonderful things about sex that are in books, in magazines, and articles. And, you know, parents can certainly steer their children towards those, again, if that's something that's culturally appropriate for you. Because I realize that different cultures have different takes on sexuality, but I think that even if your culture is one that doesn't allow discussion of sex, your kids are going to be exposed to it.
Right.
And so you have to be able to talk about that then when they bring it up to you.
We're going to take phone calls, and I think we're going to get flooded with them. I think this is a big story that hasn't been discussed very much. Our guest is Dr. Sharon Hirsch. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist. She's in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Chicago Hospitals. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers, 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we're going to be talking about the payday loan industry. Did you know the average payday borrower pays back $793 for a $325 loan? There are some states that have outlawed these places. Wisconsin is not among them. We'll talk about how they are regulated and how people get caught in this vicious trap of not being able to pay off one loan, so they go to another one of these places to get money to pay off the first place, and before you know it, you're paying thousands of dollars for a loan that wasn't very much money, but you can't get out of the cycle. So we'll look at that whole industry the second hour of our program. Online porn, children and teens being exposed to online porn, either unintentionally or seeking it out. This hour, we're talking about a study that has been done by the University of New Hampshire, the conclusions in February's Pediatrics magazine, that looks at the fact that 42% of internet users ages 10 through 17 have seen online pornography in a recent 12-month span. 66% saying they didn't want to view the images and had not sought them out. And then there is a group of people who intentionally are visiting X-rated sites, 17% of boys and 16% of girls. More than one-third of 16- and 17-year-old boys said they had intentionally visited X-rated sites in the past year, and girls about 8%. So we're looking at this whole issue. And a couple lines are open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655 is our number. Bonnie from Madison, hi.
Hi, I have two questions. One is, how do you feel parents can work when it seems like other parents are actually seeking out this pornography for their personal use, and their children and their family households are finding it, and those parents are actually maybe not disapproving of it so much? Mm. I recently looked at a book, I think it was either Pornified or Pornification, and I was actually too embarrassed to check it out from the library, so I just read a quick chapter at the library. But it said that, you know, there are mothers and fathers who actually know their children are doing this, and because they are doing it themselves, they don't feel that they can be judgmental about it. Mm. And the second is, there is a book called See Jane Hit, And a University of Chicago professor, I believe, wrote it. And I think this all stems from a loss of dignity, of femininity, and respect for gender differences, because it seems like girls are joining this bandwagon not because they're visually stimulated as boys are, but because they see that this is their route to power in society. And they don't have... they aren't being respected just for being girls, that they need to be dignifiedly courted or dated. And this is the way that, you know, Lindsay Lohan and all these other people are getting power through sexuality and misguided sexuality. So what's the guest have to say about
that? Yeah, good points, good points. Dr. Hirsch.
Well, the first, I think, goes back to the point that if your children are associating with kids whose parents encourage pornography, I think you've got to really monitor that and maybe say, you know what, those children can come over to our house, but you can't go over to their house, and really watch that. You know, parents do some odd things as far as raising their children, and I certainly wouldn't encourage them to use pornography with their children. And as far as girls getting power through their sexuality, I think that that has always been a double-edged sword for women. And that, you know, if you use the sex card to get power, then, you know, are you as respected when you get in power? And sex doesn't last forever. So we really need to encourage strong self-images for women, for girls. And, you know, I could probably go on for hours about that, because we know that the incidence of depression goes up when girls hit teenage years. Their scores go down, even though they outscore boys in elementary school. And there's just a lot of things that happen when girls go through puberty that I think we don't clearly understand how much of that is societal, how much of that is actually hormonal. But clearly there is good evidence that when you look at babies, when you dress them the same, people respond to them differently than when they are dressed in gender-appropriate garb. And so it's a fascinating question. I appreciate your point.
Yes, thanks so much for the call. And then you have to wonder, Dr. Hirsch, why it is that we spend so much time doing news stories and magazine articles about some of these people who don't have much going on. You know, they got, it seems to have... drug problems and alcohol problems, and they like to party, and there's not much substance here. And every time I see these stories about Britney or whoever, I think, get off it. You know, there's so many other things. There's a richer culture out there, but we're not seeing it.
Well, that's why I like to listen to NPR.
All right.
They don't always glorify those things. But, yeah. I mean, sex sells, violence sells. That's what's on the evening news. That's what people are interested in. And I think we have to have more things like public radio and public television that really get into more of the intellectual aspects of things.
Yeah. Thanks, Bonnie, so much for your call. It was a good one. Mark from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention that, well, I work with college students and adolescents, and I see a lot of young people who don't know how to relate to their peers. They haven't learned skills of socialization, and their self-esteem is low. And the internet stuff and instant messaging and all that contribute to their not learning how to interact. Mm. They don't develop the skills, and therefore they tend to not be safe. Rush into relationships, not be aware of consequences of sexual behavior, and that's been dramatically increasing over the last 10 years.
And where do we normally learn those things, and where are we falling down now so we're not learning those things, do you think, Mark?
Well, we used to have places where kids could go and talk to other kids. I know it's not simple, but be it churches or clubs, or even at a university level, people used to talk together, and now they're in their rooms
instead of
messaging somebody who's down the hall.
Yes.
So the face-to-face kind of, how are you, how can I judge your, you know, the kind of radar you develop when you practice social skills is really not there.
Yeah.
So suddenly people are in a sexual relationship, and it's developed very quickly, if not instantaneously, and they're into it, and consequences both of, sexual behavior and just not engaging in safe acting and so forth has been pretty dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hirsch.
I guess a comment I'd like to make, and I appreciate what you, the points you bring up, is that, you know, maybe the people who instant message and choose not to go out with friends or see them face-to-face are self-selected. You know, maybe those are people that have more difficulties either through anxiety or through depression and actually being able to form more of those face-to-face relationships. Face it, it's much safer if you're in IMing than if you actually have to see someone and they have to, you know, look at you and interact with you. So, you know, again, if your child is doing a lot of IMing and they're not getting out, you need to say, okay, you know, we're limiting your computer time. You got an hour a day. The rest of the time you can go play. You can go to your room and read. You can go out with your friends, but you can't just sit in front of the computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Mark, very much for the call. Let's go to Frank from Madison next. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
You and your guest have, and some of the callers have gone over this, but I'd like to maybe deflect it a bit. What I see and used to see on State Street was these kids who had reached, or near adults, who had reached the conclusion that the adult world was mean and that they objected to it. So they were looking for alternatives, and definitely some of them were already in trouble. But when I look at the media culture, and not just restricted to that, the general culture, what I feel is that there's this culture of contempt. You know, you're invited to have contempt for your fellow man, and perhaps a certain superiority. You know, without seeing yourself as being contemptible. And violence and sexuality are combined, and healthy sexuality is somehow devalued. You know, you don't like the cleavers anymore. That you shouldn't be the cleavers. So I'll leave it there, and thanks very much.
Thanks, Frank. Dr. Hirsch, you want to respond?
Well, I don't know if sex ever came up in the Cleaver household. That was something that was just
I don't think it did
about.
Either. Yeah.
You know, and Dick Van Dyke, they still had to have separate beds. So we've come, you know, this is a long way from where TV used to be. But I think certainly what we don't work out for ourselves, we reenact as we get older. That's a basic principle of psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So if you are angry, if you've experienced violence and you need to work through that, if you can't talk about it, verbalize it, and understand it, you're going to act it out in your adult life. That's, you know, what we all do in all of our relationships. So, and that's a primary principle of therapy, is that if you have a difficulty, you better verbalize it, you better talk about it, because otherwise it's going to get played out in your relationships. And so I'm sure that for these young adults, teenagers that Frank was referring to on State Street, they've had some pretty miserable lives.
Mm-hmm. And what about if you're seeing these images, back to the study where we started here, if you're unintentionally exposed to pornography, and as we said earlier, you said that it can cause trauma if you're not emotionally prepared to see this. Do you need to verbalize that at some point, or can you see that and hold it in because you're so embarrassed to tell anybody about it that it's going to do you harm later on?
That's such a good question. No, I think these children really are desperate to talk about this and try and understand what they saw. And so that's why I think, again, it's very important for parents to always be talking with their children about, what did you see on the internet? You look a little upset. You know, you're not talking. Is there something wrong? And just give them those opportunities. It could be something that happened at school. And you've just got to be able to talk with your kids, because, you know, if they're getting bullied at school, if they're getting sexually abused or harassed at school, then they have to be able to talk about it, or they're going to turn around and be the bully to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Dr. Sharon Hirsch. We're talking about this study, that parts of which were released in November, but it's in the February Pediatrics study done by the Crimes Against Children Center at the University of New Hampshire that looked at children and teens being exposed to online pornography. And Dr. Hirsch is talking to us about what this means, how you take in this information. We're also looking at young people who intentionally seek out these X-rated websites. Derek from Southern Wisconsin, hi.
Good morning, ladies. I would like to thank you for an excellent show. And just very brief, and then I'll take my response off the air. It appears to me that there are, at least is some movement with the online internet provider community to be providing some of the software on the splash page of their website so that people don't accidentally run into it, or so that parents can block that indeed. So I just wanted to point that out, that not everybody who is involved in that community has the intention of victimizing somebody or wants to even offend anybody or capitalize on someone's accidentally, mistakenly coming into their contact with that. I'll take my response off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Derek, you're so correct. I think that what we've been talking about is people who are basically criminals that are targeting young people in order to solicit them or to do violence to them and to lure them into further really kind of nefarious situations. But there are a lot of programs. There are, you know, the Microsoft and others who provide the internet software have filters. They have frequent updates. And I think one of the things that can be very effective in preventing accidental porn viewing is to update your filters and update your blocking devices. There are also programs that have been put on by the police and by others who really help kids understand about the internet and about how to use it safely. I know a lot of school districts are utilizing these programs, and I think that's another way to really help children understand how they can be safe online. It's the modern day equivalent of don't talk to strangers and don't take candy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for the call. And many of us, I know, are just unaware of a lot of this. I mean, we get it on our offices sometimes, all this spam that comes through, but unaware of the extent of this. It's just, and also unaware of the extent of the pornography industry in this country. It's a huge thing, isn't it, Dr. Hirsch?
It is.
Yeah. Jim is next from Abrams. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Catherine. Good morning. I think the real crux of the problem here is a deniability by most people of not only porn, but of human sexuality in general. When my daughter was of the age of, I don't remember exactly, maybe 12, 13, 14, I got her a copy of Playboy magazine, and I said, I want you to look at this, because this is how most men look at women. This is reality. This is like an equivalent thing would be like going to the meatpacking plant and seeing how where your food really comes from. So what I try to do is to say you have to decide in life with a future husband, boyfriend, you know, how will you feel about this, and how will your potential spouse down the road feel about this? And until parents stop being so extremely naive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, pornography for the most part is on television every day. All you have to do is look at the women, the girls.
You're right, you're right.
Right there in your face.
You're right.
You know, it's just that they take it to the next step when they don't have any clothes on. But mm-hmm. women don't, I think, one last point. I think that there's such an extreme difference between how men view sex and how women view sex. Mm-hmm. And until we really communicate about all that, this is just going to get worse and worse, and problems beyond anything imaginable that we can, you know, it's just really sad in so many ways and so unhealthy.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting point to bring up the fact that men really view sex as a physical thing, and women really view sex as more of an emotional thing. And I think trying to help your daughters as they become sexually mature understand that guys really are not going to relate to sex on the same level as you are is an important lesson. I don't know if we have to go out and expose all our children to pornography, but I think that one of the things that happens is that girls mature now at a very young age. They have menarche when they start their periods at around the age of 11.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an average age. Some girls have menarche at the age of 9 or 10. So you're talking about girls who have breasts, who look like women who are 9 or 10 years old. And so their brains still haven't caught up with that. And so we have to really, I think, prepare them. And what Derek brings up is very good as far as, you know, helping them understand that they're going to need to be on the defensive because these guys mm-hmm. are going to be on the offensive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that if we really want them seeing still pornography on the internet as a way of exposing them to that.
Well, maybe we should just start a movement to have everybody get married at the age of 15. Maybe that's the answer.
You know, I don't know. Romeo and Juliet, I think we're, what, 12?
Yeah, exactly.
13?
Exactly. And let's talk more about this difference between boys and girls, because this is an interesting part of this study. 17% of boys, more than one-third of 16- and 17-year-old boys said they had intentionally visited X-rated sites in the past year. Girls the same age, 8% had done so. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the pornography doesn't show a lot of sexy naked men.
Huh.
I'm kidding. But really, I think that it is. You know,
it doesn't, though, probably.
It probably doesn't.
Yeah.
It's geared more towards men. So, but I think when they had Playgirl magazine, I think it was mainly read by gay homosexual men and not by women.
Hmm.
So I think that, you know, pornography is not typically addressed women, and I think that that is because women, that's not how they're turned on.
Hmm.
That's really not what gets women excited. We know from studies that women typically are more aroused by kind of the whole image of sex and commitment and emotions rather than mm-hmm. the actual physical act, although certainly that can be arousing. So I think that that may be one part of the difference. We really don't know from this study, and I think that that's a very interesting area to look at, you know, what happens with this. Is it because girls are simply searching different search engines, don't come across it, it's not cool? We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just, I mean, if you look at the unwanted, it's the same percentage for mm-hmm. girls. 16 to 17, it's 38%, which was the percentage for the boys of wanted sex. So clearly they're having the same exposure. How do they get there?
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in the Milwaukee area, we're talking about this study that's in the February issue of Pediatrics, done by the Crimes Against Children Center at the University of New Hampshire, looking at online pornography, children and teens being exposed to this either intentionally or unintentionally, and what this means, if it can cause trauma to them, why they're seeking out some of this material, how it can be blocked, how parents deal with this particular issue. And then sort of a side story here is, and we'll do a full show on this sometime, too, because the cover of Newsweek, The Girls Gone Wild Effect, we've got Paris, Brittany, Lindsay, and Nicole, who, you know, the press just dotes on them. And we're asking a question, are there really long-term harmful effects of overexposure to this kind of, you know, oversexed bad girl image, which is all over the place. All right. Well, we got a line open. No, we don't. We have two lines open. So join us if you'd like. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, I don't know if you heard this story on NPR the other morning. It caught my attention. It was on payday loans. And this wonderful gentleman from New Mexico, where they have an incredible number of these stores, who found himself just, he had suffered a brain injury, and he found himself unable to handle money. And he took out a loan because his car needed to be fixed, and not making a whole lot of money, couldn't pay back the loan. Then his dog needed surgery, so he got another loan. And before you know it, the guy's got 20 or something of these loans, and he's paying $500 a month interest, just interest, on the 20-some loans. Let me take a look at this industry. It's kind of interesting because Wisconsin's got a lot of these places, too. But there are certain states that have outlawed these. Why is it that you can charge as much as 700% interest for people who don't have very much money to begin with? Look at the whole industry. All right, that's coming up the second hour. Dr. Sharon Hirsch is with us now. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist. She's at the University of Chicago Hospitals. And we're talking about online pornography that children are either unintentionally exposed to or intentionally seek it out. Frank from Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, I would like to make a comment, and then I have a question. I think that many people need to get educated more about computers and how they work. I work in the computer industry, and that's my comment. My other comment is about intentional seeking of pornography, because I view pornography as not sex, as more as fantasy. And maybe if the doctor could speak on specifically to the intentional seeking of adolescents of pornography, and maybe mention some of the work that's been done since the 80s in the area of sexual addiction and where that work is at. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I think certainly pornography can stimulate your sexual drive. That's its purpose. And some of that for age-appropriate people may be healthy. It's certainly legal. I think what we're really talking about today are people that have come across maybe violent or inappropriate use of pornography. There is a large literature of pornography and how that affects people. And, you know, I don't think we have really the time to go through all of that, but clearly there is a correlation between early exposure to pornography and child pornography and criminality. And so I think that that is an interesting literature to look at. I think that boys who view wanted pornography tend to have more victimization offline. They also tend to have more rule-breaking characteristics, if you look at the study in the Journal of Pediatrics. So that I think that, you know, you certainly have youth characteristics that may be affected by pornography or may lend people to view pornography. I was thinking back also to the point that was made earlier about girls, and I think one of the things that's been popularized throughout our culture is that boys need to be sexually experienced. You know, pornography is one way to get that sexual experience without actually going out and having sex or even victimizing people. But girls are supposed to be pure and chaste, and so I think that all figures into this equation as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Mike next from Cedarburg. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Hi, Mike.
Like your previous caller, I'm a computer consultant, and my experience is that people, it's a combination of lack of knowledge and a certain amount of apathy. But the parents can use the same search engines that the kids are using, actually, and there are wonderful programs out there, and they are simple to install, password protected, and they cost as little as $30 or $40. So the cost of protecting the kids, keeping them, I know the topic is pornography, but keeping them away from hate sites, ethnic hate sites, gambling sites, and all that kind of stuff can be accomplished easily by these programs. And they're very simple to install. And, I think a lot of people think, well, my kid would never do that. But when you're not home, I guarantee you a fair number of them, as the study shows, are in fact exploring these sites. And as your guest says as well, there are a lot of things that will pop up even when you're doing supposedly harmless searches.
Right. So there are a number of products on the market, you're saying, that your kids can't bypass, Mike?
Right. They are password protected. So they come with different levels of security. For example, if you have a high school kid who is doing research on breast cancer, mm-hmm. you can set them so that would be allowed, that, you know, mostly they look for certain words. And you can set, you know, for your younger kids, you can set it that word would just not be available under any circumstances. But as they get a little older, and some sites that might have dual-purpose words, let's say, would be available to your older kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set the levels for them, and they're very, very effective. They're very difficult, even for your savvy kids, to get around.
Could we get your phone number so that we could maybe put some information on our website, too, concerning which is effective and which isn't? Would that be
sure.
Okay with you? Yeah. Okay. All right. We're just going to get Mike's phone number, so I don't know if Mimi can hear me, but Mike's phone number so that we can get information about what filters are good or what aren't. Dr. Hirsch, you want to respond?
I think that's excellent advice. One of the concerns I always have about filtering devices and pop-up blockers and monitoring especially is, again, how much are the parents involved? Because they need to be actively talking and working with their children. Because if you have monitoring devices and you're not monitoring them, you're not talking to kids, it's not going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do, I think you do need to adjust the levels because sometimes they will block things that you need
right.
to see.
Yeah. Amy from Madison, hi.
Hi. I was calling in response to a discussion Dr. Hirsch had with one of your previous callers. I'm a sexuality educator in Madison at the college level and with adults, and I am also a sexuality researcher. I'm working on my PhD dissertation. And the two things that I was concerned about was this idea about how females are and how males are and that these stereotypes are perpetuated. And primarily the first idea was that there's no discussion of teenage female sexual desire in there, that we really need as parents to include that in our discussions with our children, that girls do have sexual desire and they want sex, and what are healthy outlets within that family system for that, and whether that's masturbation or whatever, but that girls want sex too. It's not just girls don't, and I think the word Dr. Hirsch used was defensive, or we have to put girls on the defense against that. And the other thing is that young men, the studies have shown that college-age men are often much more romantic than women are, and they also can get very emotionally attached during sex, but the idea is that they're not supposed to show that. So I think that we need to make room for young men and young women to be different than these ideas that we've had for the last 20 years. And so that was important to me to express that.
All right, Amy, thanks so much for the call. Dr. Hirsch.
Amy, those are wonderful points. Thank you very much for bringing those up. I think what I was referring to before were more of the stereotypes of people. But, of course, young girls do have sexual desire, and it's very important to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. Susan is next from Oconomowoc. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I just wanted to respond to the gentleman that called in earlier about showing his daughter pornography in order to let her know that how men view her. And I said I took a biological approach when I talked to my daughter, who was in sixth grade, when I knew that, you know, she would be experiencing possibly leers from older men and all that sort of thing. And I just said, from a biological point of view, how do you maintain a species? And besides eating and drinking and shelter, you need to procreate. And I said, in order to do that, you've got to have a very strong drive. And we talked about animals and having a very strong drive and the different types of animals. And it's mainly with one sex. And you mean the male sex tends to be the one that initiates. And I said, so just think about it in that term and that, you know, be on your guard for that because that's how we keep the species going.
Uh-huh. I think we ought to do a show on how everybody talks about sex in families.
It would
be a fascinating
thing.
Show.
It would be helpful.
It sure is. Do you have any place that parents can go for help on all of this? Dr. Hirsch, are there... And is all of this sparking a lot more studies in terms of long-term effects on young people of seeing this kind of pornography? I just have this feeling that there's a lot there and we don't know as much as we ought to.
I think this paper is a very good start in just elucidating the problem, but clearly we need to understand it more. The American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics all have a lot of very good information on their website. The National Child Traumatic Stress Network is a place that's government-funded that does deal with trauma and trauma exposure and how to help your children through that.
Mm.
So those are all good websites.
I'm sorry, what was the last one? The American...
The National Child Traumatic Stress Network.
National Child Traumatic Stress Network. Okay.
And you have these web addresses that I sent to Ms. Manning.
Oh, we do have those web addresses. All right, terrific. We'll try and make those available to everybody because I think parents and educators are trying to figure all of this out as well. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. I don't know if you could say enjoyed the hour, but we got a lot of information. And we also have – so I think that we can put this on our website somehow. Rhonda knows how to do this. This is where I'm falling down on these computer things. I can send emails, though, but we can give you a list of resources here. It's one of those shows where you may find resources to be important. So we will get those together and put them out there for you, okay? Dr. Sharon Hirsch, our guest – assistant professor of psychiatry at the Department of Psychiatry. She is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the University of Chicago Hospitals. And we thank her for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and to Mimi Notstein for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. If you'd like, you could get a copy of this hour. All you have to do is call the radio store. Their phone number is 800-747-7444. And the program number of this hour is 27D, 27D. News is coming up in just one moment from National Public Radio, and we will return with more of our Wednesday conversation. Should be a good second hour, so don't go away. I'd like to have you participate. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute before 10 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.